Family-centered care in the world of medicine needs to be more than just meeting the medical needs of a family. It is recognizing the people, the individuals of the household inside and outside of illness, the unique challenges, the cultural considerations that make this family system, and then supporting their needs in the best possible ways. Understanding the entire story of this family versus just a glance at the cliff notes. Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. WonderCast is made possible through the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. In today's episode, we are joined by child life specialists Adriana Ortega and Francine Gomez to discuss the unique challenges and cultural considerations when providing support to Latin families facing illness. Listen in and learn about culturally sensitive practices in child life services and the incredible ways to build community with the families that we support. This is Adriana and Francine. I am so grateful to have both of you here today as you are serving your communities through both Wonders and Worries and outside practices that you have as well. I would love to start by introducing. So Adriana, you can introduce first.
Hi, I'm Adriana Ortega. I am a child life specialist at Wonders and Worries, and I have been there for 17 years. I am a Mexican-American Latina. And I come from a very large Mexican family, and I have two children of my own.
Francine, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, my name is Francine Gomez. I am a Hispanic child life specialist. I've been a child life specialist going on 13 years, 5 years at Wonders and Worries, and I'm also working on my LPC license, and I'm working as a trauma therapist also. I come from a very small Hispanic family, and I have a dog that I treat like a child.
A cute dog. Well, I am so grateful to you both being on here today. I feel like we are trying to be at Wonders and Worries very intentional about highlighting the unique needs of various cultures that our organization supports. And I feel like we missed, what was it, National Hispanic Heritage Month? We did miss that. That was September, correct?
It goes in through September and October. Yeah.
Oh, good. So we're still like getting the tiniest little sliver of it here these last few days of October. And then we have Dia de los Muertos coming up, which is something that we will also reference a little bit in here as just giving some support for different, just a small discussion on how child life specials can utilize that celebration as a way to support your loved ones or people who, in your family who have, maybe have passed. First of all, I want to start by talking about just the intentional representation of the customs and cultures of the Latin families that we support in regard to the role of the family, how having an illness in your family can affect the familial unit, and how that is unique to the cultures and customs of the people that you serve. So, Adriana, do you want to start by kind of touching in on maybe the primary makeup of the clients through Wonders and Worries that you support?
Yeah. So I do work primarily with underserved families, and that often includes a lot of the Spanish-speaking families that come to us here in Austin. And as far as importance, with family is huge in the Latino culture, to the extent that many of the families I work with are multi-generational families living within the same home. So we have grandparents, parents, and children all living within one household. And so one of the things that I love about Wonders and Worries is that we have in our tagline that it's for when a parent has a chronic or serious illness or injury, but also when a caregiver has that serious injury or illness. And I think that that works so well for my families because we do have those grandparents living within the home with the children. So I think that just in terms of family, there's a huge, huge, huge impact, obviously, even when it's one of the grandparents that's ill.
For your kids that you support, do you see majority of them in office or are you doing virtual or in school sessions?
Yeah, so I am very lucky that I get to do all three. as many as we can. Of course, we always like for them to come into the office because there's just more therapeutic opportunities that we can provide within the office. But many of our families cannot get to us for transportation reasons and often health reasons. And so virtual support is one option. However, some of my families are not even able to access the virtual support because they don't have the same technology at home, right? They either don't have internet access or they don't have an iPad or, you know, a phone that can do video calls. And so in those cases, I am lucky that I am able to see a very small amount of families through the school. And usually that is in conjunction with Communities in Schools, which is a program that's found in most schools that have a large underserved population.
And then Francine, for your population, do you want to share a little bit about the people that you are supporting?
Yes. So, you know, being out here in San Antonio, we do have a large population of Hispanic population. And just like what Adriana said, we like to piggyback on that. When it comes to our families, specifically with Wonders and Worries and how we tend to the families here, like there's times where I'm working with, you know, aunts and uncles doing intakes with, a while back I had an intake with like three aunts and like, and I knew like them, like, you know, things were going on with mom and dad and like they couldn't be necessarily there. And it's just, again, going back into how we like serve families who are very much like communal. And, you know, we have this collectivism like culture. So it's one of those things when a parent is ill or a caregiver is ill, a lot of other family members will step up and be available, bringing their kids to sessions. So there's a lot of that that's happening at Wonders and Worries where we're building relationships, not only with the caregivers, but with like the family unit. And I think that's very common in San Antonio and a lot of like, I guess, just South Texas too. And like Adriana mentioned, when it comes to grandparents, also building those relationships with grandparents. And yeah, that's a huge population that we serve here.
Do you find that families that you support are hesitant to begin receiving services through Wonders and Worries? Do you feel like you have to, I hate to use the word, like really sell our program, but do you have to do a lot more advocacy and communication on your end in order to get families to be open to engaging?
Yes, I believe so. Definitely. I think that it is one of the times where, you know, this is a nonprofit organization that's offering services and we have it to where it's available in different outlets. And parents will come to me and say, like, Francine, this is the first time I've ever utilized anything like this. Like, I don't know what to expect or what this is going to look like. And this isn't something that we do. That's a term I've heard quite often. So it's just, you know, reminding them too of like why, how important it is to keep children in the loop of what's going on and just reinforcing that information upon them. And it is a little bit of like, I don't want to say like, you know, like kind of like that buy-in, right? Like there's a little bit of that. But I think there's a lot of like, just again, that stigma that's out there that we don't do this. Like we don't. Like, this isn't something that our culture allows. Or Adriana, you might want to chime in too. I don't want to say that it's not allowed, but.
Yeah, definitely. I find that mental health in general is a little bit more taboo in lots of cultures, right? But definitely in the Latino culture as well. And so this fear that somebody's going to come in and analyze their family and tell them that they're doing it all wrong, especially if it's by another culture's standards. And so that's why it is important that there are, you know, practitioners that have grown up like they have, because we can understand that it's a delicate topic for sure. And one of the, you know, ways that we can kind of help is by really explaining child life and explaining the purpose and the goals and how we differ from other forms of therapy. And of course, we do let them know that those other forms of therapy are important in certain circumstances as well. but I almost feel like Child Life is a great introduction into this broader world of mental health. So we do have to, you know, explain to them that we're a little bit different, and that definitely helps to get that buy-in.
Do you feel like once a family is connected, is it typically at early onset of their diagnoses, or do you feel like it is overall, it's maybe later into their treatment plans or later into having illness or secondary recurrent cancers?
Yeah, for my families, I definitely find that maybe about half are later, you know, recurrences, or they've been going through it for a year already. And they've heard about Wonders and Worries multiple times, and it's not until, you know, the fourth or the fifth time that they hear about it that they decide, yeah, maybe we should do this. Let's learn a little bit more about this. But the other thing that is very, very common is just in general, Latinos are often diagnosed with later stage illnesses. And that's just due to other disparities within the health and medical community. And so they're often coming to us, even if maybe the diagnosis is brand new, they might be coming to us more with those stage 3 or stage 4 or end stage illnesses.
Wow, that's something I really don't think about that much. That's true. I guess if they're in communities where that disparity is affecting them getting an early diagnosis, that's a challenge.
Yes, and for many reasons, right? From anywhere to financial barriers, not having private insurance, not having, being undocumented. They're worried or scared that if they do check into a hospital that they, you know, may end up on a list and that it'll kind of tear apart their family. Yeah, there are many reasons. And there's like also a little bit of machismo with some of the men, right? Like, I don't need to go to the doctor. I'm okay. I'll be just fine. And so there are many factors to why many people do come in at a later diagnosis or later stage.
I would love to take a minute to kind of touch on the unique needs of the family units that you are supporting, specifically in regards to what unique stressors that they present and also unique ways to support the family. I know that might sound a little redundant, but I feel like highlighting the stressors is important because, like you said, they're very different than some of our other cultures or families represented for influences outside of our control and some of them that we could be aware of and do better by.
One pattern that I have noticed with our families is something I've touched base before, Julie, with you, is like that eldest sibling. Again, whenever we have a family that's coming in and say, you know, you have a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 20-year-old, right? Being able to just see the family as a whole unit can be really beneficial because that 20-year-old is feeling a lot of that weight also, knowing like a lot of the responsibilities fall on the older siblings. And sometimes that can be pushed aside of like, oh, well, they're older. They understand. They know what's going on. It's like, yeah, exactly. They're older, they understand, they know what's going on, and there's a lot of stress on the older siblings. So I think that can be really beneficial and just mindful to like acknowledge and include them in like all of the family sessions.
And even going further with that and looking at the oldest sibling, you know, in some of my families, the oldest sibling is 16 years old. And they're still trying to make it through high school, but they suddenly have the responsibility to pick up a full-time job. And because, you know, mom or dad isn't able to work. And so obviously that disrupts their whole life pattern of where they were going. And not only that, but then they are also given all of the household duties and they do become that parent to the other children when the other parent is too ill to do, you know, some of those things. Another thing that we see it within these families is that the children often have to be the translators in these medical situations, which is, you know, even though these hospitals often have professional translating services, but because of the hustle and bustle of a hospital, they often don't get called in. And so, you know, there's that extra weight on those children to be delivering this information which, of course, is completely backwards. We should be lovingly and carefully explaining it to them. I think that there's just a lot of, there are some added responsibilities.
I've even noticed in some of my teen group support, and I think that it's important to highlight sometimes all the hurdles that families have to face to even get to groups or getting the support. We have parents that if a group starts at 6, a parent is trying to have their kids dropped off at 4 just because that's their one time to be over that direction because they have to get to work. They have jobs in the evening where they have to work. So it's one caregiver dropping off the kids from school and they are doing their homework in the lobby or, you know, kind of waiting with another family member that just kind of trades spaces and then they go on to work in the evening. So you have a lot of those duality of roles where parents are juggling with multi-generational families, like, okay, grandma's going to come at this point, but she doesn't drive at night. So then there's going to be another family member that's going to come pick them up. And what you have is you have some of these kids that are coming for groups at 6 p.m. and arriving at 4, 3:30 and staying until, you know, 8. That's a long day. So one of the things that I would also like to highlight is how important is it that the spaces that we use to provide support be representative of the culture of our Hispanic or Latin families?
Yeah, I have a good story to tell about this. So I've been taking my children to the same dentist's office, you know, since they were 2 or whenever. And the entire population that is seen within this dentist's office are people of color. However, all of the artwork that is on the walls, every single photograph are these beautiful, beautiful blonde, blue-eyed babies. But, you know, I know that as everybody who walks into that waiting space, they look around and they don't see themselves. And my kids have even pointed that out, like, who are these random babies that are on this wall? And so I have always been, you know, very aware of that within our own spaces at Wonders and Worries. And so it is really, really important that, first of all, signage, that it comes in multiple languages, right? Because we know that we are seeing quite a few Spanish speakers. We want to make sure that the artwork represents all different kinds of families and not families that just look one way. Even looking at things like the children's books that are in our waiting area for, you know, when siblings are in the playroom with me and other siblings are waiting out in the area, you know, we have books about Frida Kahlo and Pele the soccer player and, you know, obviously books in English and Spanish. And all of those things go a really, really long way to help those families know that they do belong in our spaces. And I think that's so, so, so important. Obviously, when we're trying to build a connection with these families and we want them to trust us, and all of that tells them that we really are here for them and not just certain types of families.
What sort of celebrations, I guess if we can take, for example, Dia de los Muertos, which is coming up, and I feel like that's something that is a great example that we can use to talk about how we can weave in these customs and cultures of the families we serve to support that family that's maybe navigating loss or illness. How in your practice do you utilize, for example, Dia de los Muertos with your families?
Yeah, well, I have quite a few families that I'm working on projects with at the moment. And I will say, like, I introduce these activities to all of my families, not just the Latino families. And so specifically when talking about Dia de los Muertos, you know, it's a celebration where we think about those that have passed before us, and it's a special time to connect with that person. And so that's kind of a line that I use with all of my families that have experienced a loss, is that the relationship does not end when the person dies. That relationship will look different and it will change over time, but we can keep nurturing that relationship. And Dia de los Muertos is such a perfect opportunity to nurture that relationship. So, you know, this week I had some children decorate altar boxes, which are these little wooden boxes that they decorate, you know, any way they want, truly. But often you'll see the sugar skulls or things like that and the photograph of the person. I have other families that have worked on decorating candles because candles are often a part of that ofrenda or that altar. And so they're decorating, you know, candles and drawing images on the outside or putting words that represent that parent on the outside. And I've been really, really lucky to see some of the ofrendas that some people have created in their homes, and they've sent me the pictures. And so, you know, just, you know, I have this one teen that paused to make this ofrenda all on her own. And she included things like her mother's earrings and her mother's scarf, photos of her mother. She did include the traditional cempasúchil flowers, which are those marigold flowers that are very closely connected with Day of the Dead. And then she also included her mother's favorite beverage, Coca-Cola, and some snacks. And so, you know, just in the act of building that ofrenda, and it was a very simple, modest ofrenda. It did not have all the traditional elements, but that time that she spent thinking about what she wanted to put there, you know, that's love that she's pouring into that relationship. Those are, you know, phrases that I share with all of my families and ask, you know, other families as well that are not Latino if they want to participate in this in some way. And many of them do. And so I love that.
Yes. Adrienne, I love everything that you just shared right now, because I think it is beautiful. It's a beautiful holiday. And, you know, in San Antonio, just this past weekend, we had our Huerto Fest, and it's ridiculous. It's like, it's so huge and gorgeous. And the ofrendas that they have everywhere are just so beautiful. And a lot of people are familiar with Day of the Dead, right? Especially, I'm going to mention Coco after Coco came out. Like, that was such a beautiful movie, and it really allowed people from different cultures to see and observe, like, what this holiday means to the just Mexican culture. And there's different things, I think, with Wonders and Worries that I have used that are part of our curriculum too, like when painting rocks and putting them on the ofrenda, like, let's paint different rocks with different words, that use like scrapbooking material to write letters. And, you know, what are your mom's like favorite foods? What are some of the things, like favorite songs, things like that, that we can incorporate in there? And some of them, Julie, have been so like natural too. It's not that I'm asking like the clients to do, but they're coming to me like, look what we have done. I think it is something that, you know, we are instilling, and we're asking, like, let's celebrate. Adrienne, I love how you shared how the relationship changes. It doesn't go away. Like, I think that's so beautiful, because there's times where our families do feel so at loss of like, what does this look like now? Right. And just reminding them of like all the things that they can do to remember and celebrate their loved ones.
I think whenever you can take a child's home life and customs and cultures and make them feel seen and valued and accepted and welcomed, and then you can give them a chance to create in your child life space, but then also bring in stuff from home and say, this is what we do at home, or even this is what we do at school, because a lot of our schools that some of these children are in primarily Hispanic or Spanish speaking environments where they also have those cultures that all come together. And I feel like our best practice is when we can put them in a space where they feel like the space between home, from Wonders and Worries, from school, they all overlap. And I feel like that is sometimes the disparity that we find with other cultures, especially ones that are very tight-knit in their family unit, is finding that way to bridge to where it's welcomed in all these other spaces in their community as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then even going back to what Francine was saying, but about the festivals that take place, the other celebrations, you know, I know that the libraries here in Austin have Dia de los Muertos activities. And so, yeah, it's just seeing that across the community in so many different ways. And then even on screen with things like Coco, I mean, how amazing for that representation to be so visible during this time of the year.
while we do focus a lot on providing resources and tools for parents, we do have a huge number of clinicians and healthcare support staff and counselors and teachers and social workers that do listen into this podcast. And I think that as professionals that provide support to a subset of people, be it any culture, but especially one where you are yourself weaving in and out of different languages, or perhaps doing primarily majority of your support in another language, I think it comes with unique stressors that maybe are not always understood by all people of the team. And I would love it if you have a chance to share how that impact is felt in your own professions, if you're comfortable.
Yeah, well, we do know that, especially like within the child life world, there are not very many child life specialists of color, right? And so I feel that in some ways we have this added responsibility that we always have to be the voice for these other marginalized or underserved communities. And that can be exhausting. It can definitely create a form of racial fatigue. Oh, there's another word that I'm blanking out on. But yes, it carries extra weight in a lot of ways, for sure.
What do you find is supportive from leadership? You are providing support sometimes on some days solely for Spanish-speaking families or Latin families. Do you find that there are certain things that leadership have done well that is supportive of meeting your unique needs as a clinician?
I think that from the very beginning, I can say that Meredith Cooper, one of our founders, you know, she always impressed me with her ability to see that different communities are going to need different things and checking in with me personally about that. You know, how are things going at the East Austin office, which is where most of our Spanish speaking clients are seen? What additional things can we find? And, you know, trying to find additional resources, although like printed resources in Spanish are very hard to come by. And so, okay, can we find some volunteers who can translate these things for us? And, you know, definitely always being open to new ideas in that way has been very, very helpful. Yeah, there are different ways that leadership definitely is would like to support us. Of course, with us being within a nonprofit, there are always some limitations, but I think even sometimes just asking, like, how is your workload? How are these things translating for you as a professional can be very helpful.
I think just being able to have more open conversations about cultural humility and what does that look like in this field, knowing like, how do we go about supporting our families here in San Antonio? And yeah, with team and with leadership and like how we want to support them. Adriana mentioned there's only a handful of us that are Hispanic or people of color. And I think it goes back to like, okay, well, if that's the case, then where does cultural humility come in? And how do we like, you know, continue to like educate ourselves on this topic and support our families, you know, within Wonders and Worries, like, you know, I know Adriana does a lot with DEI and bringing that to the surface and us being able to explore more about our own culture and what that looks like for our families and how we present ourselves to them. Like, I think that has been really helpful just to have those open conversations really with our team.
As a colleague who does not represent that culture, how would it be best for me to go about learning more or being sensitive to the needs of the different cultures that are represented?
I always find it helpful, like whenever we're learning about a new culture, of course, and like in your assessments too, that you're building on, like you're going to take like, okay, this is a Hispanic family that's walking in. Like you'll definitely take some of those stereotypes, right? Like we'll take those into consideration. But also acknowledge that culture is not monolith. Like this is something that is an individual person that I need to continue to assess. So not making like assumptions of each client based on our culture. You know, Adriana and myself, we are very different Hispanic Latina women, you know. She's a second generation. Adriana, are you first generation?
First generation, yes.
first generation. I'm sorry. She's first generation. I'm like fourth generation out. You know, like there's so many things that I hold on to and are part of my tradition. And I am a very proud Latina woman. And at the same time, like, I don't hold on to all of the same cultural backgrounds as other Latina women. And that's something just to be really mindful about. Like, we're not all in the same. Just to have that, like I mentioned, that open conversation about it too, and make assumptions. Reading different books too that are out there can be really helpful. That's something that I am trying to do too, as somebody who is not, you know, first generation and wanting to like find some of those pieces of my culture and put it all together, right? Like I think that can be really helpful also. So, yeah.
I say that it's exhausting, but I also would rather somebody ask the questions directly to me than to not ask the questions at all and, you know, just make the assumptions. And then also going on what Francine was saying about, you know, all of us being very different within the Latino community. At Wonders and Worries, I am so lucky that I get to meet families from Guatemala, from El Salvador, Peru, Venezuela, Costa Rica, you know, like I have had families from so many different countries, and even the language can be slightly different. It's Spanish, but there are some words that are said differently. And so, you know, sometimes we'll have those communication barriers, or kids in the playroom love to correct me when they're from other countries, which I absolutely love. And they teach me and I can teach them what how we say certain things in Mexico. But there is a lot of variance between all of us. And even just thinking about, you know, what we picture in our minds when we think Latino, like we have to remember that not all Latinos look the same. You know, there are Black Latinos, there are white Latinos. And so that's something that we do have a lot of kind of these stereotypes in our mind.
Because I can even say, and this sounds so shallow almost to say, but it's scary because I am an empath. I am an Enneagram 2 at the core. I have this desire to make everyone feel seen and validated and welcomed, but also I don't want to be offensive. And so it's finding that common ground to be able to ask the questions to better understand, but recognize I'm going to be wrong about 99% of the time, and having that humility, that cultural humility to be like, but I want to learn. I don't know. I'm going to ask the questions, but I want to learn so I can be better.
Absolutely.
I want to be mindful of our time. Is there anything else that you want to share that I didn't ask, or anything that you would like to close with for maybe our families that are listening that are considering getting support, but really aren't sure if that's something that they want to take on for their family?
I think I would just say that, you know, with all of our families, like, regardless of race or background, we want to be a tool for you, right? And so with all of our families, we want to first learn about you and your situation and your beliefs, and then we're there to support you all. And so I think that sometimes people are worried that they're going to come in and be told how to parent, or, you know, exactly what to tell their children. And we want to work with you, and we are always going to respect you and your beliefs, your customs, your culture, and see how we can add to that.
Perfect. Francine, is there anything that you want to add?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Adriana. And then also, like, our families coming in, you know, sometimes this is their first time, and you know, they're just at a place where, hey, I didn't grow up with that. Like, we didn't do that in our house. And this is, we don't talk about these things. And I just ask, well, you know, is this something that you do want? Like, just being able to have that growth, you know, like, there's space for both, like, generational growth and space to hold on to, like, your culture and tradition. And again, that permission to say, like, this, there is room for you here, and that we support you and where you're at, I think makes a huge difference.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.